Your partner's perfection will shine the brightest when you hold your partner in their highest light.
So in the last session, we were talking about the importance of having a quality relationship with ourselves, because that reflects onto how we're going to have a relationship with our partners. And so just to recap a little bit, Ned, how is love for self and having a good relationship with ourself paramount in cultivating quality relationships with friends or your spouse?
When we love ourselves, we actually have a greater capacity to love one another. And this was something that I experienced firsthand in my relationship. And I think that answer is almost cliche, or maybe you've probably heard that before.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the reality of that answer is it's absolutely true when lived. And I think a lot of things stay concepts until you actually live them. And this is one of those things where it's absolutely necessary to live it. I've met people that are wonderful people, but they don't love themselves at all. And the result is that their capacity to really become empowered in their life and live the life that's purposefully theirs, they're greatly diminished in their ability to do so. And we're greatly diminished in relationships to bring out the best of what a relationship has to offer each other when we don't love ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Now, something you just said about how some people are great people, but they don't love themselves, that seems like a paradox a little bit to me. Like, you're saying that they are great people. Are we talking about the potential of who they could be and you're seeing the potential, or are we seeing actually how they are?
I'd be speaking more to who they truly are.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I know some people that have really good qualities. They're caring and loving and compassionate, but they don't love themselves. And the problem with that, like I said, is that they're just accessing a sliver of their potential by not loving themselves. Mm-hmm. So you can imagine someone who's caring, loving, compassionate, and if they love themselves, their ability to really take that and go places with it would be amplified. And I think I'm an example of that in myself, and not to come from an egotistical place, but as I've learned to love myself more, my willingness and capacity to love the world is greatly amplified. Mm-hmm. I can get up on a daily basis now and share a little bit of love with the world. So, and I've become a much better partner to my wife by learning how to love myself. And when I don't love myself, I lose all sensibility. I become irritable. You know, when I overwork myself without giving myself time to rest, or if I'm frustrated or angry with myself, I'm not at my best with my partner. So,
well, I think that's a really motivating statement. If someone who's listening to this hears and relates to the idea that maybe they don't love themselves. Mm-hmm. Now, in the book, this is early on in the chapter, you make a really compelling statement. And when I read this, it really was eye-opening, because you talk about a common mistake that people, they love people the way that they need to be loved. You know, so there's certain qualities that people want in their relationships for someone to give them. And so they think they're doing a good thing by loving someone the way that they feel that they need to be loved. But that's not always the case. And sometimes we're actually not meeting our partner's expectations of how they want to be loved. So if you could unpack that a little bit for us, buddy.
Yeah, that's one of the things that has brought so much depth and value into our relationships is my ability to learn how my wife needed to be loved. When I look back at my previous relationships, I would just give to them what I needed. And I created this funny little diagram in the book, and it's this boy and this girl, and the girl's thinking, gosh, I'd really love to just hold his hand and go for a walk. And the boy's thinking, I'm going to take her to the auto parts store. Yeah, that'd be nice. She says I'd never go anywhere with her. Maybe I should put it. Maybe she wants an addition on the garage or, you know, so that was me. I was totally lost in what I wanted to give to my partner that would make me feel loved. I never sat back and took time and asked her, what are your needs in love? What do you need to feel loved? And, you know, there's certain things that I've learned now that are sort of, they sort of go with the gender. You know, women have certain needs that, and a lot of women have similar needs. And nobody's the same. And that's the thing that's one of the most important things to remember is that nobody really is the same. And to generalize and to stuff somebody into a gender role doesn't always get to the heart of what needs to happen or how to love your partner the best. So what I did in my relationship with my wife is that I expressed to her how I needed to be loved. And then I asked her, how does she need to be loved? And then I started doing that. And it's been such a godsend for our relationship because I used to get mad at my partner in the past where I would think, I'm doing all these things for you and you're still ungrateful and you still want more from me. So, and that was a common thing that just kept happening. Like, how dare you ask for more? I've given you everything I can give you. And the problem was, is that I didn't give them what they needed. I was just giving what I wanted to give.
Okay, so that's impossible not to understand. I can't imagine anyone who hears that isn't sure about what that means. But the part where this becomes a little bit of a challenge is, what if we don't know how we need to be loved? This sort of comes back to the first part of this relationships chapter where we learn to love ourselves. I think a lot of those answers lie in that. But what if someone doesn't know how to be loved? Or what if someone doesn't even feel like they deserve to be loved?
Then we back up and we learn how to love ourselves. It's so, and I think we've already stated how important that is.
Mm-hmm.
But when we don't even know how we need to be loved, this is where our partners can kick in and help out as well. Say you're going through your relationship and something comes up and you become really emotional or angry. At that point, it's your partner's opportunity to learn how and what you need in that moment. And this is where my relationship with my wife is radically different than my past relationships. And in my past relationships, if my partner was having a difficult time or they're angry or even angry at me, I'd say, what's your effing problem? You know, and I would take it personal. With my wife, I don't take it personal. I say, how can I help you? How can I make your life better right now? Because obviously, you know, things aren't going well today. And then in that simple question, how can I help you? What do you need? Is there anything I can do? And then if that person is honest with themselves, they can probably instruct you in the moment. I need 5 minutes to sort myself out. I need a hug, or I need this, or I need that. You know, I need you to help me take out the garbage or change the child or yeah. Tell the mother-in-law to go home. In those moments when we're struggling, that's when we can, if we don't know what we need, then our partner can learn that through observing when they can step up.
So. Mm-hmm. Like you had said, if your spouse is having a difficult time and you ask, how can I help? Where I see that being a challenge maybe for some people is that they need help themselves so badly that they actually don't feel like they have, like they can't muster up the words to ask that, and then they become silent. I could see that being a situation. I know I've been there myself where I just can't ask that. So I just wonder, in order to meet your partner's needs, if we're okay with ourselves and we know how to love ourselves and we're we're satisfied in that way. Does all of that become much easier for people? Because some people might be hearing this and thinking, yeah, but I mean, I just feel uncomfortable asking that. And I just, it's difficult to say the words, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Well, then that's the very thing that you need to say. When something's difficult, I look at it as an opportunity to grow. And I don't run away from difficulties in my life. And that's been one of my greatest strengths is just going into my own difficulties with a willingness to grow beyond them.
Now, another thing that we were talking about before, and this applies now to this situation, is we're talking about false labels on our emotions. What I'm curious about is what the detriments are, and what does it exactly mean to place false labels on your relationships?
This is something that we frequently do in relationships, that I would do in my past relationships. If my partner would behave a certain way, I'd say, you're this or you're that. You're always moody in the mornings. Mm-hmm. You know, I'd put a label on them. And sometimes I would hold the labels just in my mind. You know, oh, she's so this or she's so that. You know, I'd hold that label in my mind. And then when we got in an argument, then I'd pull out all these labels I had on her. And I'd say, you're this, you're that. You behave this way. I don't like this. I don't like that. And it become this laundry list of upsets that I had with her in the form of all these labels. So what I've made it a practice in my current relationship is not to hold my partner to any labels. And what I found is that I'm seeing my partner with more innocent eyes. You have to realize that every day we wake up and we're a different person. Every day. Nothing stays the same, and you don't either. All the events of yesterday and all the events of all the days that are to come are pressing on you in this moment now. Your entire duration of your life, backwards and forwards, is pressing on you. And every day you wake up different. And some people will unevolve, and some people will evolve. And in my life, I've gone through a great deal of personal evolutions. And so if who I am now, I'm a different person than my wife married. I'm not the guy she married. If my wife held me to a past standard, then she would be holding me to a very low potential. Because my potential and my range of ability to be who I am now, like or who I am now, is much different. So I find by not putting a label on my partner, I'm not holding her to a past standard. There's no longer a benchmark for her to adhere to, whether that benchmark pulls her down or pulls her up a bit.
Thing is, though, if we were to talk about you for a moment, from what I understand, is that you're somebody who's really willing to evolve. I've noticed it. I've known you for a few years now, and you are constantly challenging yourself, taking on these enormous feats of work as well. I've seen you do some pretty incredible things, and so have a lot of other people as well in the community. So you're somebody that is evolving. And some people may not be. Some people may be stagnant. Do you believe that?
Yeah, well, yeah. Yeah, because they're trapped in their mind.
Right. So
it goes back to the first chapter the first session that we talked about the mind.
Yes. So that's the thing. What if we're not willing to evolve? What if our spouse is unwilling to evolve, and that they are just staying in one place? And we get up to this discussing this now with relationships and putting false labels on and talking about restricting their potential. But what if they don't want to have potential? You know, like, this is where I see, like, this fundamentally works with people who strive to be a better person each day. Some people, however, simply are not. Mm-hmm. And so those people have relationships also. Mm-hmm. If somebody is realistic and is observing somebody who isn't making changes, you got to wonder, like, there's this fine line between where criticism is actually objective and when it is just placing a label.
I'm talking about a label that you hold in your mind, and not, and it doesn't negate communication. So yeah, in relationships, communication is king. You know, you have to have that communication. If you're seeing something in your partner, there is a time that you say, look, this is what I'm noticing. Can we talk about that?
Right.
And but it's not, it's brought up in such a way that you're looking out for your partner's highest needs, and you're looking out for their growth. So now, one thing that I will clarify is that the relationship that I have with my wife is what I call a sacred relationship. And so it's based in our willingness to grow. And as we get a little further down here in our questioning, we're going to talk about that. So I just want to set the listeners up to understand that the type of relationship I'm having is a much deeper relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want a standard relationship where you fight and bicker and you pick at each other's weaknesses, then enjoy that. You're never going to get to the depth of what relationships hold and what they offer by doing things such as putting labels on your partner and holding them there. You know, the world, I generally find that this is something that I would do not just in my relationship with my wife, but I would do it with people at large.
Mm-hmm.
So if I saw you and you were misbehaving or you're angry in my past, I might hold you to that standard. People tend to leave you. They expect to find you right where they left you. And I've watched this happen many times where, you know, I think I might even have said this in one of the earlier sessions that, you know, people were surprised that I was even spiritual.
Yeah, you did say that.
Yeah, they're like, holy mackerel, Ned Burwell's spiritual, you know. But what they were doing is they're holding me to a past standard, and I'm not that person anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't negate if I've done mean, awful things. It doesn't make that better instantly. Mm-hmm. I have to make good for that. But mm-hmm. I wake up every day different, and there's nothing stopping me in this life, in my trek to enlightenment, and people will say, well, that's kind of maybe getting ahead of yourself. I don't think so. I think nothing should get in your path to becoming fully enlightened. And I think that's our destiny and it's our birthright. And the type of relationship that I'm having with my wife supports that.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I support her enlightenment as well.
So you were saying when I challenged you there, you had said that this boils down to communication, right? If we notice a shortfall in our spouse, and we really do, the responsible thing is to address that in a way that's constructive, and obviously it has to have a little bit of an edge to it to get their attention. I think that's fair. But here's the thing, though. Like, how much of a poor relationship boil down to poor communication then?
I think a great deal of them.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a lot of dynamics that make up how a relationship's playing out. And, you know, how much are you playing out your wounds? In a relationship that I'm having with my wife, we're not playing ego tug of war. We're not playing a relationship where we're just playing out our wounds with each other. We're playing out a relationship that we're healing our wounds.
Right.
And we're setting the ego down so there's nothing to pull from each other.
Mm-hmm. Now, there is a quote in the book, too, that sort of fortifies what we're talking about here. I just wanted to bring it up for a moment here. And it reads, "Make it a priority to let your partner know they never have to earn your love or qualify for it." What's the depth of that message?
Yeah, this was something that just started to happen in my relationship. I realized that, you know, it was part of my job to know that they're never going to lose my love, and so this is the basis of an unconditional relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And it's such an important thing for you to do for your partner. We do this, and we do this by loving our partners when they need it the most. Doing that exactly what we're talking about earlier here, where when your partner's not at their best, that you step in and say, "How can I help you?" instead of what's your friggin' problem. Mm-hmm. So that's showing them that if your partner's not, if they're having a bad day and they're freaking out, that your love is not going to be retracted. If we don't love them when they need it the most, then what good is it? You know, I think it's so important to love our partners when they're at their worst times, you know, because that shows them that we're in this with them. We're not with them because things are good.
Yeah, because, I mean, this is sort of an extreme example, but if you don't buy me that diamond ring, I don't love you anymore. I'm sure things like that are said in the world. I'm sure that happens amongst people, that those sorts of things, like that love for one another, is actually that's put into a jeopardy to obtain something for someone, for themselves. You know, that if they don't do something for me, like proving their love, you know, like you sometimes even hear that, prove your love to me.
And that's just conditional. That's the ego wanting. When you love your partner conditionally, it's almost like you're just lending your love to them, because you're going to want that back. And that's the basis of conditional love, is that you need the love to come back to you. And if it doesn't, you're going to jerk it back on. You're just going to have a little string that ties from you to the love that you've given them. And when they don't think you're not getting it, it's like, okay, I'm just going to reel that back in.
Right.
And it's not really love that you're offering in that moment. You know, it's just a bargaining tool of the ego. I think we talked about that.
Yeah, we talked about how it's a bargaining chip, like a currency of some sort.
That's right.
Or like buying someone their love. You know, sometimes you hear that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, and the same thing applies. I had this thing in the book where I talk about, I had this whole list of things that you, about relationships. It was a funny list. My editor actually wanted me to cut out a bunch of stuff because she didn't find it as funny as I did. But one of the things on the list was that you don't buy your partner flowers when you've been a jerk.
Yeah, right.
Flowers are for a loving gesture, not for to say I'm sorry because you're an asshole.
Well, it's coincidental that you bring this up, because Amanda and I, that's her vocation, is we own a flower shop. Now, how many men, you know, it's not to say that they all come in like this, but there are definitely times where the flowers are purchased because they're in the doghouse. And yeah, we joke about this kind of shit. I mean, it is kind of funny because...
So you see this on a regular basis, guys coming in, limping in to buy flowers?
Well, you know, I'm not saying a regular basis. It does happen.
Yeah.
It's hard to say how many purchases made by men besides Valentine's Day and birthdays are because they're in trouble. And there have been men that actually are very routine with flowers because they just think it's nice, and they realize that their spouse enjoys them. And so they do it just because. In fact, sometimes the card message just says, just because, love Jeff, or something like that. And all the women, because it's all women that work at the flower shop, they all think that's just the best. So a little pro tip. Buy flowers just because. Don't use it as some kind of pitiful way and apologizing. You just do that with your words. Because I see it as a cop-out. Mm-hmm. Now, what if they buy the flowers and that's like the icebreaker? And then maybe they'll exchange a few words. You got to wonder, like, as to what depth the communication that precedes after the flowers are given, what is actually said, and if the flowers were just a way to break the ice as a gesture, and then the actual real healing starts beginning between whatever conflict they may have had, you know, or is it just, here's your flowers, okay, I did my thing, now I'm going to go over here and keep doing whatever it is I'm doing. You got to wonder that. So with what I was just saying with the flowers, in an ideal situation, we use the flowers as an icebreaker. But here's the thing with that. There can be a lot of discomfort when, especially if you're in the wrong, like if you yourself and you know that what you did was wrong, it can be very difficult to approach and face your partner with that and say, hey, you know, I was really wrong about that. Let's talk about it. Here's some of my thoughts. This is what I think I should do better in the future. Like that's an incredible amount of humility for someone to openly communicate with their partner like that. How can someone find that? Like what if they really, really struggle with that? How can they be better with that?
I have a saying and it came out in the book, vulnerability lives comfortably in deeper relationships. Mm-hmm. And I really believe that's true. Because when I was able to become vulnerable with my partner, I was actually, in my vulnerabilities, I was actually more honest. And my wife right away, she knew, they can tell when you're talking the truth or you're just talking from your ego.
Mm-hmm.
And it opened up a more truthful and realistic dialogue between my wife and I.
Mm-hmm.
And what it also did is it opened, when someone is vulnerable with you, they're asking you to trust them. And so, like, if you open up and say something to me that makes you feel vulnerable, you're doing that because you trust me.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is my opportunity, and we have a relationship. We're friends.
Mm-hmm.
So this is my opportunity to step in and say, you're safe to do that. You know, and it's okay for you to be vulnerable, you know, but in relationships, when you open that trust up to your partner and they handle that very carefully, it builds a bond that goes a little bit deeper. And, mm-hmm. and I find that people that don't have very deep relationships, they're people who are cut off from their ability to communicate. They're cut off from their ability to be vulnerable with their partner,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it really takes away from the relationship. And this is a message for guys out there, that your vulnerabilities will draw your partner closer. And maybe not all women would be drawn closer to that. Mm-hmm. So again, I don't want to generalize, but in a very committed, deep relationship, your partner wants to know. I want to know where I need to love my partner the most.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to know if my partner's feeling vulnerable, that's when I want to take her by the hand and walk with her or hold her, do whatever she needs me to do in that moment.
Now, and something I want to also add to that too, is in a situation where one of the people in the relationship comes forward and is vulnerable and expresses their wrongdoing and they're honest and they do the right thing. Like essentially that's a very good way to approach those situations. Now, the person on the receiving end now has responsibility as well. It's not just the responsibility of the person to admit their wrongdoing and how they're going to fix that and change that in the future. It's also the receiving end's person to be responsible enough not to rub it in the face of the other person that, oh yeah, see, yeah, I told you you're wrong. You know, like you need to be pretty gentle in receiving that and reciprocating back to that person to make them feel good about what they did, mm-hmm. not to humiliate them and to like put an extra little stab on the wound.
In a deep relationship, there is no tit for tat mentality.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it has no place in a deeper relationship.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the I told you so's or waiting for your partner to fail so you can insert your dominance of being right.
Yeah.
Does not work. And you know, the idea in a deeper committed relationship is that you support your partner in their growth, you support them in their failures, and you never step on them when they're down.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been something that has built a line, such as a strong line of trust between my wife and I. When I'm down, she doesn't kick me because I'm already down. And I've been down in our relationship. We've only been together 7 years. But in that time, I've been down. There's been times where I've felt really down, and I know that she's got my back. I know that if things were to take a turn and I needed her support, I know how she's going to handle me. Mm-hmm. And I've done the same for her.
Now, you also mentioned something that I personally have never thought of before. And it's really interesting how I've never thought of this before, because it's so common for us to plan for the future. Just about everybody does this. Usually, you know, with finances, or, you know, when the kids' college fund, et cetera, et cetera. People plan for the future, for a rainy day. But what you talk about in the book is how you actually plan for rainy days in your relationship. Mm-hmm. Can you expand on that a little bit?
Yeah. It's a funny story, because I got this idea from when I worked in the factory, which is completely unrelated. When I worked in the factory, the factory was going through this ISO 9000 approval. And so they had to create procedure manuals on everything. And I could see how it was just such a daunting task. So in these procedure manuals, they had to figure out, you know, all the bad things that could happen and what they would do in case of these situations arising.
Mm-hmm.
And then when in my relationship with my wife, I thought back, you know, those ISO manuals really saved people's lives. Like, they were really handy when things went wrong. Now they had a procedure to follow. Mm-hmm. And I thought, you could apply that to your relationship. Why not talk about, you know, what would you do in difficult times? Or so how that worked with my relationship with my wife is I'd say, when you get angry, what do you need?
Right.
You know, or here's my tendencies. And I would share with her my most vulnerable bits. I would say I can be a really hot and cold person. I could just suddenly go cold. I have the ability to have flashes of anger. When my anger flashes, I just hang on for 1 second, and this is when I need you to love me the most. So that's planning for difficult times.
Mm-hmm.
And so we shared with each other our deepest, darkest faults, or right, things that, you know, behaviors that weren't, we know that's, it's not becoming of us, but these are some of the things that we do, and we're still learning how to get beyond it.
And think about this too. I mean, not only are you sort of assembling a battle plan to diffuse situations from getting out of hand, but you're also sharing your vulnerabilities, mm-hmm, which creates trust. It's like the amount of respect for one another that can come, even if nothing, let's just pretend for a moment that nothing bad was ever going to happen. You're still sharing with one another about your vulnerabilities and your tendencies. That's
how I learned that vulnerability lives comfortably.
Uh-huh.
It was through developing a plan on how to handle each other. That's how I really learned about vulnerability.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, kind of going back to how we want to be loved, and, you know, we're talking about reading minds and so on and so forth, and how that's impossible. You have to wonder then as well, like in a relationship, desire must play a strong factor in misunderstood situations. So your spouse might be trying to get a read on you because you're quiet in the morning, or something. She can tell that there's something wrong with you, but you're not saying a whole lot about it. That starts to create tension and stress in relationships, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
So how does that kind of play out? How do you see that playing out with people when there's desires that are, we call them hidden desires or secret desires, you know, any of the three that we talked about?
Yeah. Yeah, when desires come into relationships, they can sort of make things tricky or difficult. And essentially, we may have expectations of our partners or desires, and those sort of things we have to be willing to talk with our partners about. Mm-hmm. We can't hold anything back. When we talked about secret desires, we could see how that's just, you know, pointing the car towards a brick wall. You know, you're not, the end isn't good if you have expectations or desires and you don't express them.
Mm-hmm.
That's just a breeding ground for disappointment. So the things that we want from our partners, I think it's very important to ask ourselves, can they give that to us? And be honest with yourself. I think we generally know whether their partner can or cannot provide what we want.
Mm-hmm.
And if we come up with the answer that we can't, they can't give that to us, then don't ask. Don't ask more than what you think they can give. Or on the other side of the coin, if ask your partner and be willing to hear no. So that was another big aspect to my relationship, is that I had to learn that when my wife said no, it wasn't no because she didn't want to. And it wasn't no because she didn't care about me. And that was the difference, big difference between this relationship and other ones. You know, I would say no because I didn't care about my partners as much as I should have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so maybe I was projecting that into this relationship. So what I learned very quickly is that when my wife says no, it's not because she doesn't care about me or that she doesn't want to. Maybe she can't.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe she can't right now. And that's made a huge difference in me being able to say, okay, no problem. And then the other side of it is not asking for things she can't give.
Right. So I want to present sort of a tricky, this is just coming to me now, but here's a scenario. Let's assume that there is one person in the relationship who is the breadwinner. You live in luxury. You have all kinds of stuff. And that is a desire of one of the people to have that. It's like, yes, I've always wanted to live in abundance. That's huge. But the person on a mental and a physical level, or any of those things that the human being themselves and who they are can't offer half of what they want. But then there's these things that trap you into these relationships because of the luxury. I'm just using that as an example because it's the first one that's coming to mind. That's sort of a tricky situation, isn't it?
I guess it depends how shallow you are.
I suppose it does, but you have to imagine that exists, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think there's a lot of people playing out maintaining relationships because they're afraid of loss. And that's a very practical fear when you're in a relationship and you know if you get out of this relationship you lose everything around you. Everything in your life's going to change.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the thing is that if the basis of you staying in the relationship is based on external things, you don't have a relationship. You have more of a relationship with your things than you do your partner.
Mm-hmm.
If your relationship with your stuff is more important than the person you lay down beside, then you're not having a very deeper nor a sacred relationship at all.
Okay, now here's another situation. I'm just presenting things that may be the things that people stay in relationships for. So another one that comes to mind, I can't remember, there's this... several years ago, this was a concept that was really interesting to me, is that what people put in as far as investment, that they become more attached to something based on the time invested or money or whatever. And the analogy that I read, if I'm not mistaken, it was World War II and the Russians and their tanks. And they were building these tanks, and they cost a lot of money, obviously, a lot of research and development, but the tanks were ultimately bad. And they should have just started from scratch. But what they did is, because they had invested so much into these tanks, they kept fundamentally the tank the same, but they just tried to make it better, tried to fix it. But they, instead of scrapping it, they just kept investing in it because they have already gone so far with it. So you got to wonder, like with some relationships, maybe fundamentally it's just not working. But because you've spent years with them, like a divorce is going to become quite messy because you own a house together, you have kids. There's all of this stuff that's involved in the relationship. It's not just a simple matter of walking out the door and saying goodbye. There's a lot of legal things involved. for those people that are continually in those relationships due to investment, what's your advice to that? Because that gets kind of tricky too.
It's not tricky at all. Not even in the slightest. It's tricky for your ego. And it's only your ego that's going to have a problem with stepping out of that. Your heart, your soul, knows exactly what's purposeful in your life. And so if you get real clear in your soul, in your heart, what it is that I'm to do in this moment, then following that becomes the most important thing in your life. And whatever happens as the fallout of doing that, it's purposeful. And that's been what's become really clear for me in my life, is that all this stuff outside of me is nothing but a distraction. What's most important is what's purposeful in my life. And if it's purposeful to stay, then you know, I would do that. But I also think too, you know, there has to be a willingness to communicate with your partner and to make all your checkpoints, to say, okay, and not just communicate once and approach your partner at the end of the day when he's tired or when she's tired, but to make an honest attempt to do everything you can to communicate what's not working and what your needs are.
Mm-hmm.
Then if you've made all your marks in your communication, then follow your heart. Because, you know, I wouldn't be in the position I am if I hadn't followed my heart. I knew what I had to do. And that's the problem, is the heart and the mind sometimes are not always going to be in agreement. The heart is a difficult travel companion, because it will tell you things that feel like you don't know why, or it seems so out of context with the moment. But when you learn how to go deeply into the heart, you learn how to trust it. And that's what I have done. I've learned how to trust my heart. And in doing so, it's never left me guessing for too long.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to follow it. And the only problem that we're having is the one that's going on between our ears, because the heart has no problems. There are never heart problems, ever. No such thing as a heart problem. Like, the soul has no problem. It's not in conflict or at odds or against or for. It just is. It knows what is, and it accepts what is.
I see fear introducing itself into why people stick around in relationships. And I'll use a quick example. I honestly feel like stuff and things and money and a house and all of that is so much easier to walk away from than when it's your family or like kids are involved. That changes everything. Because I actually know people who had relationships that they walked away from. It just wasn't working and whatever not. And there's kids involved. And they almost always say the same thing to me, is that it's who are they going to end up with who's now going to be an influence on my kid's life. And in some cases, it works out great. Other cases, it doesn't work out good. And, you know, somebody in particular that comes to mind is every time his ex ended up with somebody that is a real piece of work. And now every time when he goes to see his daughter, he's noticing changes in her that's an influence from someone else, and he doesn't agree with any of it. And also, too, like, he always felt that his old spouse, who he was with before, was really terrible at making good judgments. That was part of the reason why I left in the first place. But he's noticing now an effect on his daughter because he didn't get custody. So that's now a fear. That's something now. It could work out great, and maybe it's awesome. Maybe that's fantastic, but me being a parent, that'd be something that would keep me around, I think, if the relationship wasn't great, is because you still want it'd be really difficult to see someone else throwing up your kid in the air that had nothing to do with raising them in the beginning. I could see a lot of people sticking around, and that is tricky. That's tricky. I know, like, walking away from money and walking away from a house and your car and all that, like that pales in comparison to walking away from your kid. Mm-hmm. Or now that child is being influenced by someone else. Mm-hmm. And I think people who are listening who have kids can relate to that and probably agree that that would be a difficult thing. And that is the big part of the investment that we put in. But I agree that we need to do every effort to communicate, to try to make some sense out of this stuff, because maybe that is something that's a little bit of a shortcoming. And you yourself may have a great intention to solve the problem, but you have to have a willing partner.
Mm-hmm. And that's the thing with a deeper relationship, is it's a completely a two-way street.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the problem is not so much the result. It's in that scenario that you're posing with the child and the new boyfriend. The problem was not being conscious and getting into a relationship with somebody that wasn't really suited for you. And this is your opportunity to learn from that. If you got in a relationship with someone who didn't have integrity, or their morals were much different than yours, and then you separate and your child is now being influenced, you know, it's part and parcel of it's reflective of you not being conscious enough to catch that this wasn't a good relationship. All the more the importance to do a little bit of self-reflection and you have to take ownership for these scenarios you put yourself in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't have kids, so that scenario doesn't really pull at my heartstrings.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure that probably could be sandpaper to some people's ears, but
now the other thing that we're talking about in this chapter is what is the highest order of respect that we can pay to our partner?
It's to love without need. And that's something that has been one of the great things that I've learned with my partner, is to love her without needing anything. And you know, this comes to mind a couple of years ago. I was ordained, so I'm an ordained minister, and something I never thought would happen in my life. Like, I never thought that I'd have the privilege to marry people.
Mm-hmm.
But here's something that I read in every wedding that I do. So if any of the listeners out there ever make it to a wedding that I officiate, you're going to hear this. And this is something that it comes out of my relationship, and it's something that I project onto every marriage that I do. So the commitment, and here's, I'll just read it verbatim. This is what I have as the address to the couple.
Mm-hmm.
The commitments you are making are just a starting point for each of you to go forth from. As your love grows and matures, may you find your own unique way to express your love for yourself and for each other. Love is currency in relationships. It adds significant value and depth to the bond that is created by each other. The more love you pour into your relationship, the more value it contains. May this union that we are creating here today be filled with so much love that it spills into everything you do separately and together. May your love grow strong enough to be a beacon of light for others to find their way through you. May the words that we express here today find their way into your daily life with each other. I invite you to revisit these vows and this ceremony we have shared here today. And the last part here is like one of the most important parts.
Mm-hmm.
I say, in marriage, we support each other's greatness. We hold each other in perfection, not that we will be perfect, but because it offers the highest respect for each other. May you never lose sight of the relationship you've created together, for it is sacred. It becomes sacred the moment we love one another. By revering the bond you have created as sacred, you both become protectors of this union. So that last part there holds a real gem. And this is something that I have done with my wife, is I hold her in the highest respect. I hold her in perfection. And you know, there's this concept that we're not perfect. And I'd like to squash that. The soul is perfect. It's without error. There is no flaws to your soul. And to be told that you're less than perfect is a fear tactic being pushed onto you by someone who doesn't understand the depth or the wisdom of their soul. That's a heavy opinion, but it's just, we are flawless. The soul is. And so when we bring that into our relationships, you hold your partner in perfection. You offer them a place to stand, or you allow them to rise up to their own perfections in life. So that's one of the higher respects that we can afford our partners, is to love unconditionally and to place them in a place where you hold their perfection. You don't make notes and make lists of all their flaws and then reel that out when you're upset with them or when you want to poke at them or make fun of them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another point too, in a relationship where you pay the highest respect for each other, is you don't poke at your partner. You don't make fun of your partner. They're not your poking post. Like you don't pick on them for your own entertainment. So you hold them as a sacred being in front of you.
Yeah, that's fantastic. The thing that comes to mind with that is like the old saying, if you reach for the stars or reach for the stars. It's like, that's way up there, right? I mean, but if that's your trajectory, if you're really going for there, even if you don't touch the stars, you're going to end up pretty high up there. That's sort of the same kind of idea, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I think that's great. And I like what you say too about practical jokes and stuff like that. I don't know. Sometimes, you know, I've done it before. I mean, I've poked at Amanda before, made fun of her or whatever. Not in a mean way. I just kind of, and a lot of times she actually does laugh and sometimes she doesn't, but I think that's important to remind other people. That's why we have friends, you know.
good emotional intelligence. You'll be able to tell when things aren't funny anymore. So, yeah, you know, yeah. Like I'll call my wife Freddie. Yeah. Hey, Freddie, what do you think? You
know? Yeah, yeah. You
know, so it's, we have more humor in our relationship than anything. Like we laugh and we just laughing our way into an enlightened state with each other.
Yeah, yeah.
Really. So it doesn't mean the relationship's without fun and without playfulness. Mm-hmm. It just means that you don't maliciously poke at your partner, or you don't make fun of them, you know.
Or set them up for humiliation.
Yeah.
Like they're bringing you and your buddy drinks and then you trip her or something like that. Mm-hmm. So she spills everything. I don't know. I can't imagine anyone that is that big of a dickhead, but I'm sure it happens. I'm sure it's out there. I'm certain of that. But now the other part of your speech that you present when you marry people is you talk about, and you talked about this earlier too, you alluded to it, but we're going to get to it, is the sacred relationship. And by hearing sacred relationship, you immediately get the sense of, well, that's very important. And even I didn't understand what that meant when I first heard it, really, like what it actually means. If you could break that down for us.
Yeah. And this is something that I've, you know, learned. Some of these things I learned about when I was an Ashaya monk. They talked more about deeper relationships. So the concept was sort of introduced to me by them, and then it's something I've brought into my current relationship. And this is something that my wife and I very much strive for, is to maintain a sense of a sacred relationship. So a sacred relationship, by my definition, and I'll read you the definition that I wrote in my book. I'm reading it because I think it just really cuts clearly to the point of what a sacred relationship is. Sacred relationships take you deeper into the purpose of relationships and are built on unconditional love, respect, trust, and the inclusion of devotion to one another. In your devotion to each other, it's important to never lose sight of yourself. A sacred relationship is based on deepening your bond with each other, yourself, and God. There's a devotion to assist and guide each other in the fulfillment of each other's purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that was not part of my past relationships. I'm not religious, and I'm still not. I'm an ordained minister, but that doesn't make me religious per se.
Mm-hmm.
I'm spiritual, and my ordainment, you know, is about my spirituality. But, you know, I didn't look to God want to assist my partner to look to God in my past relationships. And, you know, I wasn't there to support my partner's greatness. You know, more often than not, I'd poke at her weaknesses. Like, and I look back at that now and I'm like, my gosh, I have a lot to say sorry for. That's something I've done in my past here. I've called my ex-wife up and said, hey, I'm sorry, because, you know, what I did was wrong, and gave her the opportunity to just, you know that, you know, I feel that it's important to make amends for those mistakes I made. But the sacred relationship is definitely a different realm of relationships.
Which part are you thinking about?
Truck.
Truck.
Yeah, it couldn't be further from being sacred. So you were just saying that there have been times where your behaviors were less than acceptable with previous relationships, and I too have been there. Now I'm still with my wife, and we've been together for 11 years, and I've addressed those things before. Did you make amends with, like, who you're involved with before and some of the things that were said and done?
Yeah. And when I woke up to my shortcomings from the past, I didn't dwell on them and put myself down. You know, that would be counterproductive. But part of my empowerment, I felt like I needed to go back and say and listen to my ex-wife and say, you know, where can you tell me some of the ways I didn't love you, so that I learned how to not make those mistakes again.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it's that thing about vulnerability. I'm always willing to be vulnerable. You know, if you want to call me on something, call me on it. Mm-hmm. I'm okay with that. You know, and I think it's important that we all realize and accept, you know, our flaws for what they are. And it's not that we're still not perfect. Invariably, we'll do things that we're not proud of, and we have to love ourselves through that too.
Is it possible that, like, you know, when we're talking about, like, traumas and dramas and things that happen to us and we leave a piece of us behind, what if we're the instigator of those things? And we're trying to reform ourselves and get on this better path and just be a better person. Do we have to make amends with those that we were even cruel to or not fair to or whatever not? Like, any of those types of situations for us to really feel convicted and so that we can move on to be better people? Is that kind of like a similar kind of idea?
Well, yeah, I it does come up in healing, and I know that it's part of some programs. When people are going through AA, they'll write letters, or when we're coming out of addictions, they'll write letters to the people that were affected by their behavior. And it was actually something that, not only with my ex-wife, I did this in my early 20s. I remember when I started to wake up, when I became friends with that doctor, and he was helping me wake up, and I was able to realize and see, you know, the error of my ways from my youth. Like, when I was in my early 20s, so I wasn't reaching back very far, Bay. I remember when I was a teenager, young teenager, that there was a lady at the end of my street, and she was a heavyset lady. And I used to yell at her and call her obscenities, and her husband, you know, would get quite upset, and I'd tell him off too. And then when I sort of woke up and I looked at my life, that was one of the things that stood out. And I remember feeling so bad that it brought me to tears. I was really upset that I mistreated this person, or I treated that lady so poorly. And I knew that what I had to do is I had to go and talk to that person.
Mm-hmm.
And it was one of the hardest things I ever did. And I was like mid-20s. And I go to the person's door and I knock on it and I'm thinking, oh my God, they're gonna think I'm the biggest idiot, or maybe they're gonna get angry with me or something. I had a lot of thoughts going through my mind at that time. So I get to the door and they open up the door and they didn't recognize me, thankfully. But I introduced myself and I said, I used to live up the street, and I wanted to tell you something that I'm not really proud of this, but I used to call your wife names. And then the husband didn't remember that. And I said, I've grown a little bit in my life, and I realize how terrible it was for me to do that. And I wanted to come here and tell you I'm sorry. And the look on their face, like, they both looked at me, and they both were just kind of like nodding their head. And they said, well, thank you. Thank you for coming to say that. And then they were understanding. They were actually pretty, they were loving and compassionate. I realized that, you know, the very people that I was attacking were people that could have taught me how to love more. And so in that moment, I got to learn, I learned so much humility.
Mm-hmm.
And that vulnerability opened up this great lesson for me. It was a lesson on how to love more, you know. And they showed me on the spot how to be loving, even in the face of your attacker. Essentially, I was, even though as a child I was still attacking his wife.
But mm-hmm.
I think they felt my sincerity.
That's a great story, because that's a situation again where, not to mention that you could say and convince yourself, well, enough time has passed. Like, what good is it going to do if I go there and I apologize for things I did a long time ago? It's probably been forgotten. Then again, too, like when you actually commit to the idea and you're there and you're ringing the doorbell, how uncomfortable and, you know, feelings of shame, I'm sure, coming over you. And you're curious as to wonder whether they're going to recognize you and then start swatting at you. I mean, who knows, right? Like, your mind, again, this is going back to the mind, how it can be pretty elaborate in creating scenarios that may not actually happen or exist. And you became quite surprised, as you explained. And I'm sure you walked away feeling like if you're going to be doing good deeds in the future, that by doing that, you feel more grounded in, like, in your new mindset.
Mm-hmm. It did. It helped me heal from my shame and my guilt. And because shame and guilt register at such a low level, and they're in the hall of disempowerment, shame and guilt are the two things that will drag you the furthest into your disempowerment. And so anything that holds shame or guilt for you, the faster you can get over that, get beyond it, heal it, let it go, burn it up, do it. It's so important to your empowerment and your ability to love to have meaningful relationships in your life. Your shames and your guilts will just strip away anything that's good in your life.
Mm-hmm. So now getting back to the sacred relationship, and having a sense of humility with people, as we were talking about with your ex-wife and how you called her and you guys discussed and apologized for things. How does our ego get in the way of obtaining the relationships that we want?
I think if we define the ego a little bit. So the ego. Your ego is a voice in your head that you think is you. It's a collection of ideas that you've built in your mind, your likes, your wants, your fears, your compulsions, your behaviors, etc. All of those things make up what your ego is,
mm-hmm.
all of which is not you. You are a soul, and you are love. And that love in you is silent. And when we're silent, we go into that love more deeply. And the basis of a sacred relationship is one where we're getting to know the depths of who we are. And if we're engaged in the ego, we're not in our soul. So getting to know who you are is how we bypass the ego and we learn how to engage a sacred relationship with another.